Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning. Welcome to Talkback Gardening. Lovely to be with you on this Saturday morning. A little bit of fog around the place, a little bit of drizzle in some areas of the state. Pretty dry here on the plains, although it is cloudy and a top of 24 degrees today. Well, John, we're going to look at the results of your tomato mislabeling, which has become maybe plant mislabeling survey a little bit later this hour.
It would appear that South Australia does have a plant labelling problem. Not a major problem, but a problem that's causing a little bit of frustration. So let's take a look at that and maybe what you as a gardener can do about it.
Excellent. So stay tuned for that. I have the latest ABC Gardening Australia February magazine to give away also in the show. And we'll get to your talkback calls very shortly. The number to speak to John on is 1300 222 891. But right now, might not feel like it with the mild summer weather we're experiencing at the moment, but the climate is changing and we need to look at plants, don't we, John? Not plants that we might plant this year, but maybe what plants we'll be planting in a decade's time.
Yes, we're getting more hot weather more often. And when we do get temperatures over 40 degrees, plants that have been very popular and we say, oh, what lovely plants, they appear that they're not coping with the heat. On the other hand, there are other plants that just seem to thrive no matter how hot it is. And there are reasons, and it also, there are implications, as you mentioned, as to what we might phase out and what we might grow in the front in the future. So let's talk to an authority on that in South Australia. Rick Moran is the plant manager for Heine's Wholesale. They supply a big percentage of the plants to the landscape industry and the garden industry. Good morning to you, Rick Moran.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I'm all right, and I believe that you're up the Riverland and you've got your own little planting up there.
I am indeed at the moment. Yeah, a bit cool this morning, but I'll take that.
I bet you will. Listen, Rick, we would like to draw on your knowledge. The hot weather is going to affect what you plan to grow for the industry in the future. Is climate change already starting to change the kind of plants that you grow?
Oh, look, it definitely is. I mean, over the last probably 10 to 15 years, it's been with water restrictions being implied at certain times, some varieties of plants, some species have taken a hit, whether it be fairly or not, because of the fact that they just need a lot of water that people just can't afford to give them.
Okay, so it's not the plant's fault, it's just the fact that they need lots of water and mulch and things like that, and it's a looking after problem, maybe, rather than the plant itself not being able to cope with high temperatures.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this summer alone was, you know, has been quite brutal, and it came in early and it came with a rush. And I think just the fact that we had extreme heat followed by, you know, days of mild temperatures, then and then another burst of heat, it's hard for plants to become accustomed to that. A lot of the deciduous plants in Adelaide already have gone into their autumn tones, and yet we may still get some hot weather. So they don't really know what month it is either.
Crazy mixed up kids. Could we take a look at, I put them down as winners and losers. Which are the plants which are maybe not so able to cope when the temperatures do stay in the 40s for an extended period? What do you see are the plants that are likely to be phased out over the next 10, 15 years?
Well, you mentioned earlier, I think a caller had a problem with a quite established silver birch. I mean, great, fabulous tree, but they do require deep watering early to get their root systems down. Otherwise, they become quite surface orientated and are affected, especially through hot, windy conditions. That's one that's probably dropped off the radar a little bit over the last probably 5 to 10 years. Having said that, Adelaide has a wide variety of climatic conditions, from the Adelaide Hills where birch do brilliantly well, but then you get down onto the plains where it's a little hotter and drier, they do struggle.
All right. Apart from silver birch, what do you see is starting to struggle?
I think one tree alone is the robinia. Quite often, under adverse conditions, its only ray of hope is to start to sucker when it becomes stressed. And they do get affected by the extreme hot winds, especially on the plains. So that's another tree that's sort of, again, just waned a little bit in its popularity.
Are you suggesting that robinias are going to be phased out?
Well, I don't know whether they'll be phased out, but certainly in the hotter, drier areas of South Australia, they probably will.
I'm being facetious. Sorry, yeah. Rick. I'm being a bit facetious. It's not my favourite plant.
No, John just loves robinias.
Righto. Okay, so robinias, shrubs. There are a lot of new varieties of shrubs coming through at the moment. How do you see them?
Oh, there's been some incredible work done in the breeding programs of some lines of shrubs. You mentioned earlier the Lagostromia, I must admit I'm biased. It's one of my favourites, but it's so suited to Adelaide, whether it be in tree form or shrub form. It seems that the harsher and hotter it gets, the better they perform. And again, it's all about the watering. People that get in and give their plants a good early drink in the morning prior to a hot day generally will find them thrive and flower right the way through the hottest part of summer.
They make wonderful street trees. What? Just talk us through how to look after a crepe myrtle that you put in your garden so that it performs brilliantly and doesn't just produce leaves and not flowers.
Yeah, I think the big thing is, as you mentioned earlier, mulching. Mulching's so important for us here in Adelaide with our harsh climate, especially summer climates. But it's equally as important in the winter to keep the roots nice and warm so that they continue to get some root growth through the period when they don't have leaf.
Rick, we're just losing you a bit there. I don't know if you're in a windy spot at all, but
it's very windy here.
Is it? If you can find somewhere perhaps or turn your body against the wind, that would be great.
I'll hop next to the car.
That's a lot better, thanks.
Okay, listen, just quickly, after dark is a crepe myrtle. Could you just explain what after dark what after dark looks like and why it perhaps is an ideal garden plant?
Yeah, they came in actually under the guise of, under the name of Diamonds in the Dark, which is a black-leafed variety or dark-leafed variety of crepe myrtle, with an incredible range of colours from pure white through to the fire engine reds, which is an unusual colour for crepe myrtles. They seem to be incredibly heat tolerant and just perform beautifully in Adelaide. They're more a shrub than they are a tree, so it gives people the opportunity with less space to be able to get that beautiful summer colour of blossom all the way through.
Suitability to containers?
Very much so. Yeah, containers, courtyard gardens. And even ground planting is fantastic as well. Yeah. They become generally a multi-stem shrub to around about between 2 and 3 metres, but they can be cleaned up onto a single litre as well.
All right, we're starting to look at some of the heat beaters. So, not cordylines, I'll come back to that one if I can, but it may be a loser. The winners, the heat-tolerant plants, apart from crepe myrtle, what would you put up in your list of top five?
Or a tree that seems to be gaining momentum massively over the last few years is the Tuckaroo tree.
Tuckaroo, okay. Now tell us about Tuckaroo.
Well, Tuckaroo's a northern Australian plant that seems to adapt very well to our soils and our climate here. Being evergreen and roughly 5 to 7 metres, it can be pruned into a shrub if need be, but it has that large glossy green leaf and tolerates the heat extremely well.
Okay, and how tall?
Oh, you're looking roughly around 5 to 7 metres as a tree, but it can actually be pruned down even into a shrub for screening and that sort of thing.
Two more heat beaters.
One shrub that seems to have done extremely well here in Adelaide through the last few hot summers is the Moraya, orange jessamine. I mean, flowers beautifully with its perfumed white flower, and it seems to thrive in hot conditions, more so in the ground than in a container. It needs to just make sure the water's up to it if it's in a pot, but in the ground it does wonderfully well here in Adelaide.
Having surveyed the garden industry many times, I have a list of 10 top heat lovers in front of me, and at the top of the list was Moraya, second was Bougainvillea. How do you rate Bougainvilleas, particularly the new dwarfs or semi-dwarf ones?
Very much so. For a seriously tropical plant, it seems to love Adelaide. I mean, the most spectacular flowering around Adelaide at the moment is quite often the bougainvilleas, whether they be grown as a climber or as a shrub. And as you said, there's some dwarf varieties around now that that do equally as well, and the array of colours is brilliant.
The plant I've written down as number 5 is oleander. How do you rate the oleanders, particularly some of the newer ones, which are sort of smaller in size, but certainly in colour, just non-stop colour?
Look, it's a plant that does extremely well here in Adelaide. I suppose it's a little bit contentious with
the toxicity.
The toxicity that the plant contains. Yeah. So it's probably grown by only a few growers, but they are still doing a lot of breeding into bringing in dwarf varieties, which are all very much heat-tolerant plants. They're probably just a little harder to come by.
What about some trees or shrubs for the hills that are going to be heat beaters? And you know, and
yeah, look, the hills obviously have gone through they've been to hell and back this year. But things like the ornamental pears, the Polaris family, I mean, there's a large range of them. They do very, very well in the Adelaide hills. They're an extremely good plant to use as a buffer for protection against fire. They're considered one of the better fire resistant plants, and that's not to say they won't burn, but they generally will diffuse embers as they approach properties.
All right. The next plant I have for the hills is the Viburnum tinus.
Yeah, great plant. I mean, it's a golden oldie, and I think that's over the last few years we've seen some of the tried and true old-fashioned plants like the Viburnum family and the Freycinias and those sorts of things come right back into vogue, and for a very good reason. They've proven themselves over the years.
There's a couple of new... There's a couple of new varieties coming through. Can you mention those that are really tough and are suitable for smaller gardens?
Look, we're trialling a few of the new varieties in Viburnum. One that's probably not as widely known... but it's starting to come back with a vengeance, is Viburnum suspensum. It's an old-fashioned glossy leaf Viburnum, which has a pendulous sort of honey-scented flower, followed by these quite spectacular red berries, which give it a real second flower almost.
All right, that was Viburnum...
Viburnum suspensum.
Suspensum, okay. Listen,
yeah,
before
I've seen
we go...
a few through the hills that have done really well, and I've been sort of viewing a hedge up here... In the Adelaide Hills going past it for 20 years, and it's still as good as the first day I saw it.
Before you disappear, I would like to just get you to talk a little bit about dwarf bamboo. During winter, hundreds, probably thousands of plants are sold because of their lovely red foliage, and people buy them, take them home, and they admire them that winter, and the following winter, they're green. You can tell me, because you told me the secret of getting your dwarf bamboos to colour up after year one.
Yeah, generally, if your neandinas are not colouring up with that, you know, spectacular reds and oranges through the colder weather, it may mean that you're just being a little bit too kind to it. Generally, if you feed right up until the winter season starts and they're still producing growth and energy, they're not really keen to change colour. The changing of the colour is not so much stress, but it just means it going into that winter season. So if you stop your feeding pre-summer and let them fend for themselves through the summer and autumn...
So now's not the time to sort of fertilise them. Would you toughen up in terms of the water, or would you not?
Water's sort of an issue more for Mother Nature. I mean, if the heat's there, definitely keep watering.
Yep.
But then if it's an established plant that's been in for 9 to 12 months, you could probably start going back to, you know, one or two good drinks a week, and then probably by about May, almost forget about it.
Rick Moran, I'm sure people would love to be able to sit next to you for a couple of hours and just chat about plants in the garden. But thank you for sharing your information at the moment, and good luck with what you're doing in revegetating a little section of the Riverland with native plants. I think the birds and the bees and the critters up there will say thank you.
No problem at all.
Thanks very much, Rick. Great to have you on board. Rick Moran, plant manager at Heine's, a wholesale plant nursery, and an incredible knowledge, as you said, John, about all things botanical. Beatrice on the text line says, don't forget flowers for the bees. Well, definitely, that's a definite way to attract them. And yellow, I understand, is the way to go there. We've got lots of people planting crepe myrtles on the text line and wanting to plant crepe myrtles. Is there a right time to plant them, John?
They're deciduous, so probably during winter. But the nursery industry now have developed the pot trade, and so you can buy them in containers, and so long as you don't buy them when they're root bound, if you buy from a creditable garden centre, then you should be able to buy them in a container. And obviously, you would, if it was me, I wouldn't plant, say, in December. In fact, I wouldn't plant, say, November, December, simply because the root system gets a bit of a setback and it needs as much root system going for it as possible to get through the hot weather. So I would suggest that March, April would be good times in autumn. Certainly get them planted any time during winter, and even spring, probably September, early October.
Gee, so there's a good space there for planting.
Yes,
them. Well, lots of people are interested, and lots of people are saying that their crepe myrtles are beautiful at the moment, including Mary of the Barossa. Deb from Warradale warns that they're not great for habitat for natives. I can't say yes or no to that one, but
no,
thanks,
well, you can't
Deb.
Have everything.
You can't. And Lee is enjoying her, or his, whoever, stunning Morea in the ground at Richmond. Healthy and vigorous, flowers regularly, and doesn't need to be specially watered.
Yeah, Moreas are just incredible. I certainly would put them right at the top of the list as well.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for your calls and texts on that. We're getting straight back into Talkback Gardening up next.
Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe.
On ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Now, Marianne is in Port Noarlunga and has been very patient. You've got some mealy bugs in your orchids, Marianne.
Yeah, it's not terrible. Yeah, John, we've got about 35 Phenophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthalophthal field, we pulled them all out, soaked them in bleach and water, then repotted them in fresh pots and fresh bark and thought we had it solved. And then a couple of weeks later, we've got mealybugs.
They're back again. Very, very, very persistent. And they're not easy to control. And because they get into the root system, the traditional insecticides are not very, very effective. There is a chemical which is available, and it is still available. And it's it was sold as Confidor. Now, Confidor, the brand Confidor, has been withdrawn. The company that sort of had the license to sell that has decided it's no longer going to sell it. But the active ingredient is imidacloprid. Imidacloprid.
How do you spell that?
I-M-I-D-A-C-L-O-P-R-I-D. Imidacloprid. If you go to a garden centre, and say, are you still... A lot of the garden centres are still selling Confidor because they've got stocks of it. They knew it was going to be phased out and they've still got it. But if you go to a garden centre and say, look, do you have the chemical that was in that was in Confidor? They'll know what you're talking about because there's a number of them. You know, I can mention that Bunnings have decided to take it off the market. Mitre 10 are still accessing it through a different source. And you'll find, I think, it's Brunnings. The Brunnings label have their version of an imidacloprid, and there's probably others there, and I'll try and do some homework and see if I can get a list of it, because it's a unique chemical. It's one you need to respect because it could have a damaging effect on bees. But there are times when the plants, the bees are not around, and things like orchids, where you don't have a bee problem or you don't rely on bees for pollination, if you water that into the root system, you'll find that that will clean up your mealybug. And there are times when there are not other chemicals around and that chemical will work, and I have no qualms about saying, okay, in that situation, read the labels, follow directions, and if you use it sensibly, it's not going to end the world.
Okay, well, wonderful. All right, John, I'll try and chase that up because it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. Very, very frustrating. And you want success and you know you can grow them, and along come these little critters and they just sort of mess things up for you.
Yeah. Lovely. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for the call, Marianne. Peter is at Yankalilla. Now, Peter, you want to move some citrus, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Good morning, John. Good morning, Deb. I have a couple of dwarf citrus, dwarf lemon and a dwarf mandarin in Adelaide in pots, and I'd like to move them down to Yankalilla. But we've got citrus gall wasp in them in Adelaide, and I'm just wondering, is there a safe time of the year to move them down here to Yankalilla, where we've got some citruses, but we've had no problems at all with gall wasp?
Righto. I'm not too sure whether it's in the Yankalilla area. If there are listeners that have got citrus, could you let us know whether a citrus gall wasp is in the Yankalilla district? Because I think that's a very, very important point that you've raised there, Peter. Very important. If you are going to move your plants, take a look at last year's galls. Anything that's older than last year, don't worry about it, because the galls have come and gone. And even last year's galls, they would have come and they would have gone. But you could have new galls forming on your tree, and they'll be very, very small. You wouldn't notice them at this stage. So coming down to when to do it, is that your question?
Yeah, that's the question. That's, is there a time when the insects have all moved out and then I can move the plants safely?
No, it all happened in December.
Right.
Earlier on, the wasps came out, they mated, and within 4 days they died, but they would have laid their eggs in new branches, new soft branches.
Okay.
And if you take a look at your branches, you probably won't see any swelling on the new branches yet. Probably in about 6 or 8 weeks' time, you'll start to see little swellings.
Right.
But so they're there. If you've got the problem, they're inside. You can't see them. You don't know whether you've got a problem or not. You just need to take on board the fact that they could be there.
Right.
So, and if you're going to do it, I would be moving them probably early in March. When you'll need to give the plants plenty of time to establish their root system before winter. You'll need to take up as much of the root system and disturb the root system as little as possible in the move.
Right. We were planning on leaving them in the pot and just bringing them down here.
Oh, that's not a problem. Okay. Well, wait until probably March would be a good time to do it. But I don't know that there is a solution.
So I'm just worried about importing the wasps down here.
Okay, stay tuned. If people in Yankalilla know that there's a citrus gall wasp in the area, then there's no point in you not taking yours down there, because if it's already there, it's a problem.
Yeah. Well, we have some other citrus in the ground here, and we haven't seen any signs of gall wasp, and I really don't want to bring them down here.
Yeah, okay. The commercial growers do have access to chemicals which can control the critters while they're inside the bark. But I don't think it would be responsible of me to mention that, so I won't.
No. I was just wondering whether there was a safe time when, like you said, the critters have moved out and haven't laid eggs yet, and then I could bring them down during that period.
No. You've got a little period once you can see the galls are formed. So by the end of winter, you'll see the maximum number of galls that you're going to have.
Right.
And if you remove them then and there are no galls left on your tree, that would be your best time to minimise the likelihood of taking it with you down to Yankalilla.
So the end of winter and then cut them all out.
Absolutely.
Okay. No, that's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Peter. Lynn in Loxton next with a pistachio question. Hello, Lynn.
Hi.
Tell us
all. Yes, John, can you get a male Chinese pistachio tree, do you know?
Why not?
Well, I don't know. Is there one available? And you know the name.
No, I don't know enough about them.
If
you
get... garden tree. I've been told mine's a female because it's got heaps of berries on it.
Sure.
That's formed after the flowers. And I liken it to a cedar tree when you come to rake up the berries when they drop.
Yes. Well, they should set without cross-pollination, but you'll get much better reactions if you do have cross-pollination. You'd need to go to a garden.
No, it's not the tree that produces the nuts that you eat. It's the garden variety.
Oh,
tree.
Okay. No,
the ornamental tree.
Yeah,
yes.
Righto.
Well, the ornamental.
Righto.
Yeah.
Righto. Well, why do you need a cross-pollination?
I don't.
No.
So what's the question? Well, is there a male variety of the Chinese pistachio tree?
I'm not aware of that.
You're not? I've been told, oh, yes, you can get a male variety. This one produces many berries after it flowers.
Oh, I see.
And I just get sick of picking up...
So you want a berryless?
Yes, I do.
Okay, righto. Well, so we've finally got there. My apologies. Look, you'd need to talk to somebody like Rick Moran. He would tell us immediately. If I can, I'll try and work that out and get you some information back for next week's program. But in the meantime, if you go to a good garden centre, they can probably tell you whether there is a male or berryless one. But I
Okay. Mm. All right, then. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Lynn. Gary is in Finnis with that terrible problem of calthrop. Hi, Gary.
Good morning. How are you?
We're well, thanks.
All right, John. Yeah, I've got calthrop coming up. It's not so much in... I'm on a small acreage and 5-acre property, but the paddock next door to me has got a lot in it. If you can't get around to spraying that before the seed sets, if we spray it, is the seed still viable?
Absolutely.
Oh, bugger.
Yes, 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 and more. Get some kind of mowing equipment and mow the plant and rake up all the material that you've mown. And
it's about an acre and a half.
Righto, yeah.
Look, the patch he's got there. So.
Sure.
I'll just have to get him on it early or I'll have to do it.
Yeah.
I'll volunteer to do it myself.
Okay. Could I suggest you get in touch with Natural Resources, a Department of Natural Resources in the Adelaide Hills? They are a mine of information. And when you've got a large quantity like that, they can talk you through your best bets in trying to minimise the problem and maybe overcoming the problem.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, thanks for that. Another quick question. When I fertilise my orchids, I use a water-soluble fertiliser.
Yep.
Is it best to have the medium slightly damp or dry before?
No, damp. Make sure don't put fertiliser. Fertiliser, particularly the ones that you're talking about, are a mild form of an acid. If the soil and the roots are dry, it'll burn. On the other hand, if it's moist, the moisture in the soil and the roots will dilute what you're putting on and reduce the likelihood of damage.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in, Gary. And we'll come to more of your calls in just a moment. Of course, the results from John's mislabeling survey coming up. And also, I've got an ABC February Gardening Australia magazine to give away.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe.
On ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Rod is at Yankalilla and is growing potatoes in a bag. Hi, Rod.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, John. John, my question is I've got some potatoes growing in bags from a well-known seed-saving company. And they started off really well, but it seems they've been heat affected, and I'm not sure whether I'm partly to blame for overwatering them or underwatering them.
All right, can we just come back? So the potato, are you talking about the seed potato still in a plastic bag yet to be planted, or have you actually planted the seed potatoes into a grow bag?
Yes, I planted the seed potatoes into a grow bag.
Right, okay. After the last time, I just thought I need to sort of clarify exactly what the problem is before I start giving a long answer. Okay, continue.
There's probably about 10 litres of soil in each bag.
Yes.
Maybe a little bit more.
Okay. So tell me what, they came up, they looked good, and then they sort of started to go backwards?
Yeah, the new growth on them... it doesn't look too bad, but all the older leaves have gone brown and died.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think you've had a heat problem, even though they might... Are they growing in direct sun?
Yes.
Okay, well, there's your problem. On a day when the temperature, the air temperature is 40 degrees, I've put the thermometer on the ground and it gets up to 60 degrees. When a temperature gets to 40 degrees, root growth stops. And it gets to 42 degrees, roots die. So the temperature inside your little grow bag would have exceeded 40 degrees and knocked off the root system. There would have been enough of the root system remaining and it started to come away again. But that was your problem. And I would suggest if you're trying to grow anything in a grow bag or a container, like a vegetable, shading during summer, during December and January, will allow you to grow your plants and enjoy quality vegetables at the end of the growing period. If you leave them in the sun, this season it's been disastrous for a lot of tomato growers, and we'll talk about that in future programs. And I'm sure we'll find when we do our survey, those that have mulched, watered correctly and shaded will come through with flying colours.
And those, funny, because my tomatoes are going great.
They're going grey.
They're going great.
Oh, okay, yeah, good. Yeah. Okay. And they're out in full sun?
Yes.
And mulched?
A little bit.
Righto. Okay, well, that's good. You've got away with it.
Yeah.
A lot of people haven't.
Another quick one, if I might. I planted the Queensland blue pumpkin.
Yes.
And it's going great guns. It's covering about 6 square metres, the vine,
right,
and very healthy. But it only seems to have male flowers.
Yes. Righto. Well, it's probably because you've got a fair amount of vigour there. I'd suggest that you take the tips out of the main growing stems. That will set it back a little bit, make it send out smaller side branches. It'll slow its growth. And once you've slowed the growth, you'll find it will start producing female flowers. And as the temperatures in autumn start to recede, you'll find that also will increase the quantity of female flowers. And hopefully you'll still have a few male flowers to do what they have to do.
Okay, I'll take the tips out then. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you, Rod, for calling in. Graham at Norwood has a kaikuyu issue. Welcome to the program, Graham.
Thank you for that, John. Good morning. I've got a bed of agapanthus and sadly infested with a lot of kaikuyu, and I was hoping you might have a magic spray that's going to kill the kaikuyu and let my agapanthus survive.
Well, if you can wipe your kaikuyu and not get chemical onto your agapanthus, I can give you a solution. And the solution,
not that easy.
Yeah, no, that's right, yeah. So, I mean, the solution is glyphosate.
Right.
There are times, well, people don't like glyphosate for whatever reasons, and some won't use it, but I'm suggesting that there is an answer, and if you're prepared to say, righto, glyphosate is designed to control plants that are systemic and have a systemic root system. So if you can get the chemical onto the leaf, and you don't need to do the whole lot, you only need to get probably 50% of the plant wiped with glyphosate, and you'd mix up your glyphosate normally, put a little bit of detergent with it, get a sponge and put gloves on your hands, and then if you can wipe as much of the kaikuyu as you possibly can, because it's systemic, you'll find that the bits that you control will die back and the chemical will get down into the root system of what's remaining and certainly retard that. You might have to do it 2 or 3 times, letting it grow again and then sort of knock it back, but if you do that, that will overcome your problem.
Okay, but certainly keep it off the agapanthus leaves.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much for your help.
Thanks, Graham. Jenny in Adelaide wants to know what is eating her capsicum and raspberry. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, how you going?
Oh, there's a mixture. Capsicums and raspberries.
I know.
Sweet and hot.
It's strange. Yes. I've never had anything eat my capsicum before, but I've got them growing in pots.
and it was just starting to fruit, and suddenly half the leaves have been eaten, and I can't see any caterpillars or anything on the plant.
But it's the leaves and not the fruit that's been devoured?
Yeah, the leaves. Half the plant has been eaten.
Yes. And when you the leaves are being eaten, could you describe what's left of the leaf? Are there little round scallop marks taken out of the leaf? Are there holes
they're
in the
pretty,
leaf?
No, they're pretty devastated. There's hardly any leaf at all. They've eaten the entire, just the stem left.
Righto. I'm looking from the description. And just the little stalks are left, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That sounds like a critter rather than a caterpillar or a weevil. I would be thinking that there is probably birds. Do you have little small birds around or parrots maybe?
I've got a big palm tree that sometimes have parrots in it, but I haven't seen them this season.
Yeah, righto. And it could actually be mice. And or rats, you know, they don't normally eat leaves though. But when you get a whole lot, it's usually a bird that sort of had a munch of it. I would be at night time go out there and see whether you can see a caterpillar or anything like that.
Yeah, I've had a look and can't see anything.
Right, and the area's not very very wet or moist.
No, it's in a pot.
That's all right, but that can be moist. You might, yeah, I mean, if it was kept moist, you'd find slugs. If you can tip the pot upside down and take a look at where the root, drainage hole is, have a look in there, and you might be surprised to find there are slugs in there, and they're coming out at night, and they're kind of driving up and having a munch. That can often be a problem that's very, very hard to detect unless you know they're there. Apart from that, you've got to be able to identify what it is, and if you can identify what it is, then you can do something. If it's a critter, probably exclusion, putting some kind of netting or material over the area is probably about the only defence.
And the raspberry, got a young raspberry vine, and it was going really, really well,
yeah.
And the top young leaves have all been eaten off that as well.
Okay, well, that doesn't sound like slugs or snails.
No.
No, that sounds like a critter of a flying type. Maybe possums also. Exclusion. If you can actually get some kind of netting, you can get all kind of wire nettings now. You just only need to get small quantities of it and make a little cage and put it over your plants. You might find that that's the cure that you need.
I'm just wondering how the birds would eat, because there's nowhere near it that they could roost, like that they could perch.
Jenny, from now on, it's speculation without me actually giving it. All I can sort of say is it sounds like you've got a critter problem. I put my money on it being probably a possum. A second would be some kind of bird, and you would see the birds around, so... I would suspect probably more likely to be possum, but
so
I can't help you any more than that, Jenny.
Bit of detective work necessary to find out what the problem is.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jenny. I've got an ABC Gardening Australia February magazine to give away. If you'd like to win it, call through now, 1300 222 891. You're getting a lot of support for possums on the text line.
Yes.
Some listeners having very similar issues, I'm sure. We're going to talk about your views on mislabeling of plants in just a moment, because John's got his survey results.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
The lines are going crazy for the February ABC Gardening Australia magazine, but it's already been won. Sue has won from I don't know where. Venus Bay, fantastic, on the Eyre Peninsula. Congratulations to you, Sue.
Have we had any replies on Yankalilla being an area for citrus gall wasp?
Yes, look, we did. We had a text earlier, I think, from Rob saying it is gall wasp free. So
okay, well, that's important.
The view should be don't take anything in to the area.
Yes, I think
that may
you.
Have gall wasp on it.
Sure. Okay, yes. That's good. Thanks.
So thanks, Rob, for sending that through to us. Now, John, due to some listener inquiries to talk about gardening, some people have been planting tomatoes and been very surprised at the tomatoes that they're actually growing. And you've, in your Good Gardening newsletter, done a survey to ask about tomato mislabeling.
Yes, and the survey indicates that if you've got a problem of mislabeling tomatoes or other plants, you're not alone. There are other people out there. Just over 200 replies in the 5 days between putting the survey out and me collating the information, and 56% of respondents indicated it's a problem. I was surprised that the problem is bigger with single plants, tomatoes in single plants. 64% of the people had a problem there, 43% had a problem with punnets, and that makes more than 100%, but some people had a problem with both. Yeah, and with varieties, which varieties, it was just too diverse. Most of the popular varieties came up very often, but because they're popular varieties, well, they'd be planted more often, so I think it's right across all of the varieties. In terms of brands, that was important. And obviously, a lot of people don't look at or are not aware of the brand. You've got it's a Mighty Red tomato, but it was produced by a certain company. And it's that company, because if you know the company, you can go back and sort of say, hey, there's a problem. But we'll come back to that. Interesting is that 37% of the people had a problem in previous years. And what surprised and worried me a little is that were you having a problem with other plants? And there was a big percentage of there, I think it was about 20%, 40%, had problems with other plants. And that's very significant. And there was about 20 different plants named. And again, it would appear that it's probably across the vegetables, flowers, fruit trees in particular, bulbs also. So there is a problem out there. And I had hoped that we'd be talking to Jeff Prettyjohn, but I don't think he's on the line.
No, we can't get him due to reception problems, I'm afraid. But what do we do about it? We know this problem exists, John, and it's not isolated. So how do we combat it?
Well, I spoke to Jeff Prettyjohn yesterday, and he's a very, very keen sailor, and he's out on a boat, I suspect, if we can't talk to him. So let's take a look. He was saying he was surprised at the problem, but admitted that could quite likely be a problem. And he's suggesting it could either be in the seed. The seed companies provide the seed to the wholesaler, so it could be a seed problem, and it could also be a wholesaler problem. And the wholesalers are responsible for putting the labels in, and they don't always put all the labels on the plants until they actually get to selling, and so that can be a problem there. But, okay, there is a problem out there. I don't think it's a major problem, but it is a problem. To your question, what can you do? At this stage, I'll go to the Nursery Industry Association. They've sent back a reply, and I won't read the whole lot of it, but just some comments there. And they're sort of saying that they are always striving to present healthy quality products to the public, and they don't see it as a major issue. They carried out a quick survey of garden centres, and the garden centre said they are not getting a lot of feedback from gardeners saying it's a problem. So the solution is, if you've got a problem, tell your garden centre. Because if you tell the garden centre, it's not the garden centre's problem, it's where the plants are being sold, being grown, or before that. So if you've got a problem, the important thing is to take the label and go to your garden centre and say, I have a problem, here's the name of the plant, and here's the company that provided it. And if we know that, the garden centres can go back to the wholesalers and say, excuse me, there's a problem here. So I think that's probably the best solution, is if you've got a problem, don't hide it. The garden centres themselves don't see it as a problem, because you, the gardeners, are not telling them you've got a problem.
Yeah.
If you do have a problem, tell them and something can happen.
So there you go. The power lies with you. The most important thing, I guess, John, is hang on to your labels when you buy the plants. Have them nearby so you know what it was you bought and what you expecting.
Stick them in the ground. Stick them in the pot or something like that. And take a look at not just the label, the brand, but who actually grew it, so that you become familiar with that. There are four or five major wholesalers of plants that supply the garden centres. And I think the important thing is it's people power, isn't it? It's Butte. It was raised on Talkback Gardening. You were smart enough to pick it up and say, hey, John, I think there's a bigger problem here than just one or two. And by using the newsletter, we can actually delve into it. It's not a scientific survey, but it gives us an indication. And the important thing is if there's a problem, there's a solution.
Exactly. Well, thank you to all of our Talkback Gardener listeners who did ring through with that and who took part in John's Good Gardening newsletter survey. Just remember, subscribe to that. All you need to do is put John Lamb Good Gardening into your search engine and you can get that into your inbox every Friday. And we had a text from Deb earlier saying, in relation to your conversation with Rick Moran, John, are you going to be putting your, you know, best drought-beating plants in the next newsletter? And so maybe you are, maybe you aren't, but you can listen back to this program because we're a podcast program from 9 until 10, and you can listen back to anything you hear on the radio here for up to a week at our ABC Radio Adelaide site.
Which is brilliant. Yeah, no, I love doing that. You just, you know, listen to last week's program and I can sort of, oh, goodness, I think I got that one wrong. but yes, okay.
Don't tell anybody.
So next week, in next week's newsletter, which comes out on Friday, absolutely free, all you got to do is subscribe, I will put in, and I have a list of the top 10 heat beaters. And that I carry out surveys every time we get hot weather. I do little surveys with garden centres, with gardeners themselves. And so I have a list of top 10 heat beaters. And also I'll try and put in maybe some of the ones that have been not so tolerant to the heat. And that may be worthwhile putting those in. So we'll have a special heat beater, winners and losers. We'll be putting those in next week's Good Gardening newsletter.
Wonderful. Peter wants to reassure all Yankalilla gardeners he won't be moving his dwarf citrus. Thanks for letting us know that, Peter.
Peter, there was
a bit of concern.
Sure.
And Margie from Marden has sent through some wonderful photographs of, I think it's Corellas, eating all of her sunflowers. So she certainly knows the culprit there. Let's go to Malala. Leslie, you're on Calthrop control again.
Yes, hi, Deb. Hi, John. I'm not sure whether it's calthrop that I have. It's a small, small leaf creeping type weed. I believe from memory it's got a little tiny little yellow flower.
Yes.
Seems to have like a bank of seeds, which are prickly seed.
Prickly seeds, right. Yeah. That's very much sounds like calthrop. And
right.
The reason why all of a sudden we're talking caltrop is because it's very temperature and moisture sensitive, related, and as was mentioned by Chris Butler last week in Talkback Gardening, after the widespread rain, the soil is lovely and warm, and caltrop is going to be everywhere if you've got the seed in the ground.
Yeah. My question is, I was looking at the chat before that had it, and finding, you know, something to get rid of it, or to at least leave it out to some extent. You can buy these torches, like a heat gun, and I'm just wondering how they would work.
You can burn them off, yeah. Yeah, Chris Butler often talks about putting hot water on them. I don't like the thought of people carting hot water around. But, yeah, you can now buy these little blowtorch-type things.
That's right.
Yeah. And, again, I don't particularly like that as a concept. But if it's you don't have any other solution and it works for you and you're able to sort of take all due care when you're sort of putting a flame on the garden to make sure you don't burn other things at the same time.
I'm in paddock, so I wouldn't be using it during the summer months.
All right. And while we're talking to caltrop, Deb, repeating what Chris Butler was talking about last year, the weeds coming up, they're small. If you control them, get them while they're small, you can hoe them off or destroy the root system. And the spray to use, you don't have to use glyphosate when they're small. If you use anything with MCPA, and MCPA and bromoxynil probably would be one of your good ones, or MCP and Mecaprop is another one. And there's other versions of it. But
And get onto them quickly.
Do them them quickly, yeah, and they will bowl them over while they're small.
Great. And our last caller this morning, Fran in Waterfall Gully. Good morning.
Good morning, Deb and John. I wanted to tell you about my crepe myrtle that I have at Port Wollunga, not at Port Gully. I would argue that it's the best crepe myrtle you will see anywhere in Adelaide this year. And so it's at the beach. I've never watered it. I've never fertilised it. But what I did do this year was remove some sort of reedy, flaxy things that were around it. And it's just a mass. It looks like a great big red balloon.
Well, Fran, send us through a picture and we'll post it.
Okay, and the fact that it's grown by the sea indicates it probably got some good tolerance to salinity. Let's hope so. And just on that, anybody that's got them, their plants, and you'll find that they sucker. When they're under their stress because of the heat and they're not being watered, you don't deserve them, but they are very forgiving, but they will sucker. Take those suckers off. If you come little suckers around the base, cut them off as quickly as you possibly can. And if you've got big suckers on them, wait till they're finished flowering and we get a bit of cooler weather and a bit of moisture and remove the suckers. Get a saw and saw them off, but don't let them grow.
Uh-huh. Fran, thank you. Sounds absolutely lovely. Do send us a picture through the text line 0467 922891. Thank you for all of your calls this morning for Talkback Gardening. John, it's been another very busy morning. Congratulations on the survey. Getting it going so quickly, getting the results through so fast. I had a text on that from Ray at Glenelg saying, I'm sure the ACCC would be interested in hearing about that because, of course, products are supposed to be fit for purpose or to be replaced or refunded.
Yes, and often you can have a little small problem and if people ignore it, it becomes a big problem. And I think we don't have a big problem. We have a problem and answer comes back to you, the gardener. If you've got a problem, go and tell your garden centre. The garden centres will fix it for you.
That's right. So the thing is, hang on to those tags when you buy. Don't plant and throw it away.
Yeah, and take advantage of the lovely weather we've got at the moment. It really is wonderful opportunities for putting either late summer vegetables or you can start putting in your winter vegetables, your broccolis and things like that. But take advantage of the weather and I'll say until next week.
Before you say it, Sean, can I just ask a question? Is it too late for tomatoes?
No. We've still got 10 weeks to maybe more of growing weather. Buy little cherry tomatoes, ones that grow quickly or mature quickly. And so I'll now say, good gardening.